All right, live on Facebook. Hello, Facebook. AJ Rivera here. Welcome to episode 22 of AJ TV, where we interview the smartest people I can find, and hopefully they make me smarter and you guys smarter as well. So today I'm very excited. We have one of my favorite people on earth here. We'll call it an interview, but I'm mostly just going to try to stay out of his way. He is a sales coach. He is a reality coach, a life. I would call him just an everything kind of coach. He really helps people, I think, drop into who they really are and realize what they're capable of. That's what I get out of talking to you. So, and his name is Jesse Elder. So, Jesse, thank you for being here. I appreciate you and taking your time. I know you're very busy with lots of projects right now. Well,
this is a total priority, man. I've enjoyed every second of the time that we've gotten to spend together in both in physical reality and the virtual reality of conversation over the phone and all that other jazz. So, stoked, man.
Totally. So, really quick, for people who maybe have been living under a rock, can you tell them what your deal is? Who are you? Why should they be really excited to watch this episode here?
Yeah, I'm just a guy, basically, who grew up as a homeschooled kid in South Texas, never took a test, was kind of left to my own devices by a father who's a school teacher who didn't want his son going to school, and a mother who went on to become an ordained Catholic priest in the American Catholic Church that allows female clergy. So I've had a pretty cool journey so far. And when I was a kid, I got into martial arts. That led to a real fascination with what works, what doesn't work. I saw all sorts of people get their I'm sure there's going to be kids at some point watching this, so I won't get graphic. I saw a lot of really, really, really smart, hardworking, accomplished, talented martial artists get carried off in a stretcher in these reality-based competitions, and I was just fascinated by that. You know, why would somebody who's put in hours and hours and thousands of hours of training fall apart like that? And so I became very immune to any sort of theory that didn't produce a measurable result. And I went just on this savage binge of split testing paradigms. And I started testing, okay, what works, what doesn't, in the ring, out of the ring. That led to opening a school, martial arts school. Now I had to learn really quickly how to do sales and marketing because I found out nobody cares how good you are. They don't care how much you care. They don't care what a nice person you are. They don't even care how hard you've been working or how long you've been doing this. They just want to know what's in it for them, rightfully so. So I learned how to market and communicate and ended up building a business that was amazing. We were training about 1,200 people a week. We had 8 locations. We had 53 people on staff, part-time, full-time. The year that I sold the business, we did $3.2 million in sales. And I sold that in 2012 because I realized that that was the bend in the road that I didn't want to take. I wanted to take an exit and see what was on the other side. So sold the business, ended up getting kind of passed around the internet marketing community because I had a couple of clients saying, hey, you got to meet this guy, Jesse. You got to meet this guy. And I'm very, very appreciative of those people that really opened a lot of doors for me and helped me to meet people in the quote unquote marketing space that I was able to help them strategize and help them more than anything, just weaponize their intuition. Everybody knows what to do. You have freaking 24/7 access to cosmic Google streaming through your frontal lobe. So if you'll just like get logic out of the way, make logic your bitch long enough to open up your heart and allow what you're here for to come through, then life moves pretty fast and it's a lot of fun. That's what I do.
Is that all? Okay, I thought you were gonna be a little more impressive. No. So that's amazing. No, I think the most amazing thing is we can call it organic or divine timing or whatever, how you got into the marketing space. Because like everybody else, it feels like is hard pushing themselves to get into this. And you're just like, yeah, one person really liked what I was doing. And I mean, that's how I had heard of you before I met you, just because of what you were doing. And you don't run formal webinars. You don't run these like lead magnet camp. You don't do any of the stuff they're really teaching. You just grew it based on like offering massive value to the world. And you, then that's how you continue to grow your business. So that's like one of my favorite things about what you're doing. Look, people are already commenting about what you're saying. So yeah, all right, cool. So can we talk a little bit about the, I'm going to call it the boring stuff. It's not boring. It's very interesting to a lot of people, but I know you and I would rather talk about more cool things. So let's quickly get through talking about ethical sales, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's totally appropriate. It leads to the, it leads to the ability to have more esoteric philosophical conversations. 100%. Pay your bills first, philosophize later. And if there's any tagline that I've got attached to my name, it's the action philosopher. Philosophy is awesome as long as it results in action that creates something that is meaningful and valuable for you. So, you know, with all of that being said, sales really is nothing new. I mean, you know, Zig Ziglar used to joke about sales, and not that I'm a Zig fan or detractor, but this quote stuck out for me, and he said, "Sales is the oldest profession in the world." And he said, some people would argue and say another profession is the oldest profession, but he said, I will suggest that a sale had to happen first. And so, so sales is powerful, man. We're all buying all the time. You know, we're all, we're selling something all the time. And what is sales? It's just, it's an exchange of value where both people feel that subconsciously they got the better end of the deal. Because if you don't feel like you're getting the better end of the deal, you lose energy. And so then you have to use old industrial era concepts like discipline and willpower and all that. Man, that shit went the way of the plow. It doesn't belong in our world now. So I think selling ethically really just means, you know, you've got things, everybody listen to this, we have things that we love to do, we have things that we're really good at, with things that make an actual difference for other people, not a feeling difference, but a results difference. And this is where a lot of people, especially in the fitness space, my observation is a lot of people kind of fumble this because they say, what do you help your clients do? And they say, I help my clients feel better. I'm like, great, but nobody's scrolling through Facebook. They're going to and put the brakes on their thumb from scrolling and go, oh shoot, that's what I want. So I think you have to communicate to people in a way that is valuable to them first and foremost. And if you're listening to this and you're not hitting your financial objectives, then forget for a little while about what you love to do. Forget just temporarily about the things you're really, really, really good at, and just focus on service. Because, I mean, doesn't it feel good to serve? I mean, isn't it cool to serve doing something you have some basic competency at, even if it's not your pie in the sky favorite thing? Pay your bills, man. Satisfy other people's needs. Be of actual service. Subdue your ego long enough to actually understand what people need and what people want, and then give it to them. And I hear this all the time. They're like, yeah, but I want to teach mindset. Or yeah, but I want to teach meditation. Or I want to teach well-being. Go, great. You know what? You know how you teach that? Fucking be it. Just be it. Not so that people understand you, but so that it's impossible for them to misunderstand what you're all about.
Totally. No, I'm with you. I love it. So, I mean, what would you say to the person who feels, because like, I know I've struggled with this personally, where their value, like your value as somebody, even mine, has been proved, right? So it's very easy for us to ask for a lot of money for things because we already know and have internalized this and have gone through the process. And I have my thoughts, but I would love to know what your thoughts are on somebody who's like, well, I'm not worth $30,000 a year yet, or I'm not worth $1,000 for a fitness program or whatever, right? They still think they're worth the $20 an hour or a month. I've met some people who do that. So what would you say to them? Like, how do they get over that?
Totally. So first of all is separate your worth as an individual from the amount of money that's flowing in your life. You can watch 5 seconds of television and realize that there are people who may or may not have real value to society who have money flowing in and out of their life. So that's number one. Separate forever the value that you have as a human being from the amount of money that may or may not be flowing in your life. I've had millions, I've had less than zero, and none of that had anything to do with my inherent worth as a human being. And if it's true for me, it's got to be true for every other person on this planet. So that's number one. You are not your money. You have money, but you're not your money. And no matter where your money goes up or down, that has zero to do with your innate value as a human being. And maybe later we'll start talking about oscillation and frequency, which is your actual gift to the world. So that's number one, separate your value as a human from the financial current situation. Secondly, you want to have money flowing into your life. It's not about the stuff that you have to offer. So stop getting better at explaining what you do. Stop trying to add letters after your name. Certifications are cool. CEUs are awesome. And that's great. But the thing is, I mean, I'm a homeschool kid from South Texas who's never taken a test in his life except for his driver's license. And I have to show you this. I'm very, very proud of it. It's my crowning educational achievement. And what I'm most proud of is the fact that I got the poor lady behind the camera. She's like, okay. She was this wonderful, large Hispanic woman. And she says, okay, mijo, time to smile. So I sit there and I kind of smile. And then right at this camera went, I made this face. And she looked at the picture and goes, oh, no, mijo, we cannot keep that. And I was like, no, let me see it before you delete it. So I looked and I was like, I have to have that on my driver's license. And she said, no, mijo, you have to make a very serious face. You cannot make a face. And I kind of flirted with her a little bit. I'm like, no, is it okay? Can you just keep it? And she's like, okay, mijo, you can keep it. I'm like, thank you. So I've had this license. Sadly, it's expired. But look at that.
Oh, my gosh. How could I not want to buy anything from that guy? Please. One way or another, that guy's going to get my money. So I'm going to do it the easier way.
Crazy. So anyway, I've never taken a test. I'm not suggesting anything other than the reliance on education, the reliance on your title and your describing how good you are. That's all about you. And it's actually, for most people, maybe not this audience, but for most people, it's a thinly disguised attempt at gaining approval. And what you want people to do is say, oh, you're so awesome. And you're like, oh, thank God, all that stuff paid off. So you want to make more money? Stop talking about your stuff and start listening to what the other person is going through. Start listening to what the other person has going on. Be genuinely interested in what the other person has to say. Every human being on this planet is absolutely unique at not only a cellular and a DNA level, but at the level of your divine frequency. And I know that sounds hippie AF, but there's a physical reality to that.
Yep.
So let's make this practical. You want to make, let's just say 100,000 is the number. For some of you, it might be 100,000 a year. Some it might be 100,000 a quarter. Some of you might have a goal of 100,000 a month. Some might be 100,000 a week. Some of you might have a goal of 100,000 a day. The universe doesn't freaking care. So if you want to make 100,000 in whatever time period makes the most sense for your goals, all you have to do is solve $100,000 worth of problems. Mm-hmm. And so that requires getting off of, here's what I have and here's how much it's worth. It's not about your stuff. I'll let the listener and the viewer fill in the blank here. Nobody gives a flying about your shiny It's not about you, man. So you want to make $100,000, solve $100,000 worth of problems. So what is it costing somebody to continue doing what they're doing? You know, if somebody is 32 pounds overweight by their own estimation, not yours, but by theirs, and they're overweight by 32 pounds, and you say, great, I have just the thing. Fail. Massive, massive, scummy, slimy marketing, selfish fail. What we can do is ask that person, okay, and just say, okay, no problem. Understand where you're coming from. Thank you for sharing that, because I know that that's not always easy to tell the truth about where you're at. So mad respect, man. Just that, and your client, the prospect who's about to be a client, is going to go, whoa, I'm not being judged, I'm not being corrected, I'm not being directed right away and made to feel like, you know, cattle going to the market, which is how scales were invented, by the way. Scales are not invented for humans. They're invented to weigh cattle going to the market. Ugh.
Yeah.
So you ask them, you know, what's your goal? And they say, well, I want to lose 32 pounds. Instead of rushing to the plan or showing off your testimonials or your abs, just say, I know you've seen it, man. What are my qualifications? Left and right, baby.
Here's my PayPal link.
Yeah, here's it. You can have a QR code tattooed right here. And my Bitcoin wallet right there.
Oh, my gosh.
But the idea, instead of, if the person says, yeah, I want to lose 32 pounds, you don't rush to the thing and say, okay. What you do is say, can you help me to understand? By the way, always take responsibility for understanding. Don't put the spotlight on them to explain. Don't say, can you be more specific? That's like an invasive question. So you reverse the energy and you say, I really would like to understand. So, or can you please help me understand? And you just humble yourself, really.
Yeah.
And then you say, how is having an extra 32 pounds on your body right now? How is that affecting you? How is that showing up? And then they'll tell you, and then say, okay, thanks for sharing that. And can you elaborate? How else is that showing up? How else is that showing up? Who is this affecting? How else is that affecting? You start asking all these radiant questions, and you know what you're going to find? It's not the 32 pounds that they want to lose. It's the fact that they canceled their family vacation at the beach because they don't like the way they look and feel in a bathing suit.
Yes.
Yeah. And now they're having to tell their kids, we're not going to the beach. We're going to go to NASCAR instead.
Did this happen to you?
I don't know where that came from.
Okay. I really
don't know where that came
from. Maybe somebody watching or listening.
Somebody's listening now saying, screw this guy and his hippie beard. It's like, what do they really want to change? It's not the weight. There are people who have an extra 80 pounds that are perfectly happy with life. Yeah. So it's not the weight. It's what the weight is creating. It's the problems the weight is causing. It's the symptoms that are showing up in their life. And I think just empathizing with that and understanding that, man, as easy as it sounds, I see so few people that are willing to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And those that do help an amazing amount of people at an incredibly deep level and are rewarded proportionally.
100%. I 100% agree with you. I have a story that's kind of come to my mind that I remember that I guess shows, I guess, proof for me of what you're saying. We used to have salespeople in our gyms, and we had one girl who was not a trainer, didn't work out, didn't really care. She eventually was a salesperson, and we used to call her the Purple Minion because she really didn't know what she was doing. She just kind of running around making sounds. And her name was Michelle. I'll use her name. And then we had another salesperson whose name was Lauren, who was fit and worked out and all this stuff. And you would think, okay, well, this one is really going to know, like, really going to close sales and close things. But she was very aggressive in how she sold people, at least when she started. She improved it, and it was fine, Lauren, if you watch or listen to this. But for a while, she was very like, well, why? Why do you want to change your life? Why? And people would like be like, why are you attacking me? I feel very judged. Where Michelle, as an example, would always ask, I don't understand. I don't get it. Can you tell me more? And it was very funny because she really didn't get it, but it allowed her to understand and not hold a space of judgment for people. And she, aside from managers, was the highest sales. She had the highest closing percentage of any salesperson we ever hired. And she wasn't a fitness person ever in her life. Yeah. Anyways, just to echo that this works, even if you don't have an awesome beard like Jesse here.
Well, I love that story, AJ, because that really speaks to this very, very basic, very human principle of, you know, just get our ego out of the way long enough to allow other people to be important. In order for that to happen, I think there's some very basic undoing that needs to happen for most people. We live in it, and we're at a very additive time right now in history, where people are seeking to accumulate lots of ideas and lots of information so that they can ascend and rise up and all these things. But really, in my observation and a huge part of my work with private clients is not around adding more stuff. It's about eliminating the non-essentials. And when you and I first connected in Austin, during those couple of days, it's just such a powerful experience. And one of the philosophies that came out during that time was this: nothing to hide, nothing to prove. And that's a very, I mean, those six words change people's lives, because when we really look at how much energy we're putting into hiding things from ourselves, about ourselves, and not in a judgmental way, but you know, hiding things from the world. And then also how much energy we put into trying to prove things, you know, prove things to ourselves, prove things to others. But man, what if life is just a freaking awesome video game that you've already won, and now you're playing the bonus level, which includes a healthy dose of amnesia, so you forget that you're the creator.
Then, perfect segue, my friend. I love it. He's looking at the clock. He's like, all right, we got to get to. No, but it's totally true. It's totally true. I think and one of my favorite things you've ever said that kind of stuck with me is you're making, and this is a little random, but it's just coming to my head, so I'm going to listen to it. It's saying you're making the exact amount of money in your life that you want to right now, which I could understand why it would maybe really, like, even if you met me like 3 years ago, that'd probably piss me off. Like, no, I want to make 10 times more and I'm poor. You know, I'm canceling Christmas bonuses and taking from my personal savings to keep my businesses open. I'm not making the amount of money. And so, like, if you're talking to AJ from four years ago, I don't know, none of it's real anyway, but like 4 years ago, right? Like, what do you say to that guy who's like, listen, I just took all my personal income and savings to keep my business afloat, and I want to make lots of money. Let's say I want to make $1 million a year, some abstract number, right? And I'm negative thousands every month. How am I making the amount of money? How can you say that? Who do you think you are, Jesse Elder?
That question answers itself. I think I'm Jesse Elder. And
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
who you are as well.
No, and this is the same thing. I mean, I've had this conversation with my quote-unquote past self, who's actually happening elsewhere on the quantum field. And I've had that conversation through time piercing and through that meditation to say, here's the deal, man, here's the deal. And what I've discovered is this, the only reason why any human being on this planet wants anything, including making $1 million or whatever the amount is that we think we will feel different in the having of it. Mm. We think once we have the million or whatever the amount is, then we're gonna feel a lot different. And that's a very useful illusion, because it allows us to tap into our ambition, our creativity, our focus. So we look at that objective, and it's true. Life does change when you have more money, because it multiplies the amount of choices you have. But the money flows in direct proportion to the feeling we have currently, not the future feeling we think we'll have when it happens. And so money is not even energy that gets thrown around a lot, but that is an older paradigm now that is not totally applicable. Money has no energy by itself. If you take a dollar, or you take a gold coin, and you lay it down and you just look at it, it's going to stay there forever until a human being moves it. And so money by itself is energetically inert. It is neither positive nor negative, which are the two qualities of energy. So since money is neutral, is inert, has no energy of its own, it's the emotion and the energy in motion, emotion that we have around money that causes it to be repelled from us or compelled towards us. And so the fastest thing that anybody can do to allow the flow of money into their life is to soften their relationship with money and begin to come from a place, not gratitude. Screw gratitude. I don't use that word. I haven't in
screw almost. Gratitude. Love it.
Yeah.
I'll write that down.
Yeah. Just make a t-shirt out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially you've got to wear it around California.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's not because there's anything wrong with gratitude. The emotional feeling of gratitude, I think, is one of the most is one of the highest frequency energies that we can feel. But the word gratitude has in its etymology the word gratis from Latin, which is free. And nothing exists in this universe for free. There's no such thing as something for nothing. And I've also observed that people who come from a place of gratitude tend to be very reactive. Now, again, this is a generalization, and there are exceptions to this in every person's life. But most people, when something good happens, then they feel grateful. Then something else good happens, then they feel grateful and they take themselves out of the driver's seat. And, you know, I'm sure there are people here that believe in God. I'm one of them. I think God is one of the most useful acronyms ever invented: generation, organization, and destruction. That is the flow of the universe. And so with the feeling of gratitude, waiting for something to happen first is a very spiritually, psychically, energetically impotent way to live. And you are not impotent, you are important, and you have the opportunity to import these ideas from Cosmic Google and then export them through your unique creativity. And gratitude puts you in the passenger seat instead of in the driver's seat. So appreciation is to gratitude what sprinting is to crawling. They'll both get you there, but one gets you there a lot faster and you get in better shape and you look badass while you're doing it. So why not sprint?
Okay, that's awesome. I know what you're talking about, but I think this is a perfect time to segue. I'm not good at segue, so I just say I'm segueing. And you were talking about downloading this knowledge from Infinite Google, which you and I have had several conversations, so I know what you're talking about. But can you explain that? That's the reality hacking that you talk about. I know you teach people about it as well. Can you kind of explain what that is and how, if I'm a novice to this or even an intermediate, how can I start doing that? Because that sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is pretty sweet. And I'll to your point about, you know, how can I do this? And somebody says, I will say that every human being, you've got a couple of things going for you already that make you a living master. So there are no newbie creators. There are no intermediate creators. There are only masters, because every human being, upon your arrival through the birth canal and you get here and your announcement of your arrival, for most people, it sounds like, wah! And that's your first elevator pitch. I'm here. For most people, and when we have free will choice, and you have a prefrontal cortex that allows you to envision a future different than the present, and those two unique characteristics of human beings, free will choice and the ability to imagine, is all you need, and it's what you have to be a master. Now, some people may be hearing this and going, no, when I'm a master, I'll have $1 million, I'll have a six pack, and I'll have the perfect relationship, and I'll be driving a Bugatti on Saturdays, the rest of the week a different car. And that's, in their mind, that's what the creation of a master is. But let's really look at this. If you're doing something masterfully, it means that you're doing it consistently and well. You just may be doing it unconsciously. And so how do you hack reality, and what is this Cosmic Google? Well, everything in this universe, this one, everything in this universe is energy, and it moves at different speeds. And so if we look at, you know, what's in between my hands right now, you can say, air is between my hands. What else? Well, light. So you have the dance of photons. What else? You have sound. If I'm speaking or you're speaking, then there's sound waves traveling in this space. But what else? What else is in this space? You know, you could say abstractly, well, you know, it's about a foot. Okay, well, that's a measurement. But what else? If you put your phone in between my hands and you dialed, you would be able to make a call or receive a call. That means there are cell signals right here. If we open up Spotify or SoundCloud and we start jamming some amazing music, well, that means the song is beaming through that. What else? Satellites are circling the planet right now and streaming financial transactions to the tune of trillions of dollars a second. And that's all happening right here. So there is a lot going on that we can't perceive through our physical apparatus, but it doesn't mean it's not there. And if you go higher up the frequency, you have brainwaves, which if you attach, you know, things to your head, you can sense brainwaves. There are technology now that can sense brainwaves with no physical interaction, just with a scanner. So go higher up the scale, and you have subtler and subtler energies, of which thought is one of them. And so your brain and your body too, especially your microbiome, your gut, but it's all connected. So your body and your mind, your body mind, is both a transmitter and a receiver of this vibrational frequency. And so when you have a thought, and that thought is projected out into the world, into the universe, it doesn't die. It just continues to go. That means that every thought that's ever been thought still exists. And when something vibrates high enough, it actually transcends the illusion, which is a very awesome, useful illusion, but it's an illusion anyway, the illusion of time and space. And so when something, you know, it's like you got here, under here is time and space because this is the world of the relative. Up here, there's no up because this transcends space, but it's a nice placeholder. When something oscillates and vibrates at a high enough level, it transcends, which means that the you that's living the million-dollar lifestyle already exists elsewhere in the quantum field. And that version of you is experiencing that life every bit as realistically as you're listening to this right now. And so to reality hack is not to go and work harder. To reality hack is not to not work at all. To hack your reality is to understand what is reality. Reality is the sum total of your experience. Visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, gustatory, that'll make all the NLP happy. NLP people, is that what they are? NL people.
Wouldn't you agree? Isn't it? Wouldn't they?
Yeah. Wait, how do I match and mirror you here?
Let me see.
So the point is that, by the way, I have huge appreciation for anybody still listening to this going, what is this ADD wacko conversation? What are these guys doing? But to hack reality is to stop holding the world hostage and expecting it to perform a certain way for you to then feel the way you want to feel. Money, people, the world, politics, the environment, all of that is only affecting you to the degree that you're, number one, taking it in, number two, interpreting it in a way that allows you to pull away from your center. So when you practice what I would call strategic ignorance, and you no longer allow into your mind, you no longer allow into your heart those signals that do not bring you joy and well-being, what you'll find is you become the most insanely productive version of yourself that you've ever experienced. You just live in flow, high velocity, no resistance, and opportunities come to you, ideas come to you, and you just go, oh, why not? And you go and make it happen. So the version of you right now that is making $1 million, this version of you thinks that when you get there, you'll be this totally different person. Well, you are that person elsewhere in the field. So you can actually have an imaginary conversation with that person, and you can notice how it feels. You can notice what does your body feel like. How do you breathe? How do you walk when you're at the $1 million level? How do you sit? How do you express yourself? And the more time, it's exactly like working out. You have time under tension. The more time under tension in a good way, the more that you engage and indulge in that imagination, the closer and closer and closer and closer that reality has to become, until you're pretty soon you're seeing it through your own eyes and you go, whoa, nice Bugatti there. Whoa, look at this house. Because you've already been there so many times. So reality hacking is not going from point A to point B as fast as possible. Reality hacking is taking the points, touching them together. And you can do that through this theater of your mind, to use Maxwell Maltz's psycho-cybernetics term.
Awesome. I'm with you. I'll echo what you said. Anybody else who's still with us, I appreciate you. I think it's amazing that you're here, and I think you're still going to get more value as we continue this conversation, as long as this gentleman will allow me to keep him here. What if, again, devil's advocate, right? I like playing the skeptic because there's always skeptics when I'm doing this alone. So what if somebody's like, well, how do I know that future version of myself is who I want them to be? What if that future version of myself is sad and alone and poor and doesn't even have any dogs or cats, but is eating dog and cat food? And yeah. I don't know how much sadder I can make this, but that seems pretty good.
That's pretty sad.
Is there a way to change that? Are you saying that that's like a result of inaction? Are we choosing that?
Well, if the millionaire version of you exists, so does the homeless one.
Yeah.
And so, and since everything's possible and there's no judgment in the divine level, there's no good and bad Once you transcend time and space, it's just all the same. So what we can do, which by the way, there's no good and bad, but there is a natural and an unnatural order to the universe. So expansion is natural. Evolution is natural. Ascension is natural. Unfolding is natural. From the unmanifest to the manifest. From, you know, as above, so below. In the Bible, it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and the kingdom of God is within you. This unfolding from imagination to reality, physical reality, is an inward to outward experience that's expansive and that's natural. Anything that is restrictive, anything that is constrictive, anything that is suppressive is actually unnatural and is a creation of man's conscious thought. So entropy is actually a human judgment. Entropy, because, you know, the tree dying and turning to dirt is not bad. We humanize and we go, oh, the tree's dead. Oh, no. Ah. But if you look at it from a, you know, from a natural perspective, that's expansion. That's the cycles of life. So the version of you in this quantum field, the version of you that's homeless, may be totally happy, totally free, completely peaceful. Eckhart Tolle, before he became a best-selling mega millionaire,
on a park bench.
Lived on a park bench for 2 years, man. Yeah. So, you know, how can we judge and say, you know, that's bad? Plus, no life is ever done. So that might be the moment of your life. But we have a way of negatively romanticizing. You know, we tend to dramatize in a negative way this version and go, oh, I could never do that. But you know what? I've not been homeless, but I've had many nights, including in the last 2 months. I don't know where I'm going to sleep. I've been in towns where the hotels are all booked up, Airbnb, there's nothing. And I'm like, cool. If I end up sleeping on the roof of a building or so what if I sleep on a park bench? Who cares? I'm indestructible. Despite the fact that I just had the best business month of my life, that to me appeals to my sense of contrast.
Oh, gosh.
And so, yeah.
Sitting on park benches.
Yeah. And so for us to say that's horrible, that's our judgment to what we think it would be like. And back to the point, expansion is natural. To do more and to have more and to be more is in alignment with natural principles of growth. And we feel that right in our bodies somewhere, usually solar plexus, sometimes in your chest, in your gut. We feel that as a physical sensation of what's right for us and what's not right for us. And there is no universal right or wrong. There's only what's right for you right now. And if you want to do more and be more and have more, then you have to have money to do that with. Sure. Because money is the choice multiplier. Money allows you, money makes you more of who you are. Money doesn't make you happy, but it allows you to express your happiness more powerfully.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's very well put. I've not heard it like that. Maybe I have heard it like that from you, but it didn't stick. And that's very powerful.
I want to add one more thing on there, AJ, just the piece about making money being natural.
Yeah.
It is natural and normal to want to make money because money is synonymous with freedom. Mm-hmm. And so it is unnatural to not want more freedom. And whether that's a freedom to expand or freedom to go deeper, you know, relationships, this is a big issue, right? Between, you know, people in relationship, you know, one person wants freedom, the other person wants connection. And all of a sudden they're like, you know, how do I get both? But there's a freedom in the relationship. There's a freedom to go deeper. There's a freedom to develop intimacy. There's a freedom to grow in connection, which is not limited. And that's a beautiful freedom. Then there's, you know, freedom is just, you know, it beats in our heart, man. It's what we're made of. And so money equals freedom. And so the person that doesn't desire to be more free is actually bucking the laws of the universe and they're resisting the natural outward flow of energy. So the person that doesn't desire to have more money flowing in their life so that they can express that money through their values, that person who doesn't want more money is actually abnormal. They're sick in the head. They're fighting the natural laws of the universe.
Does that... This is a real question from me. This isn't an interview question. Does that include, obviously, I think maybe I'm being assumptive. Obviously, it would include people who are struggling, poor, broke, whatever, right? Maybe even people who are average income. I think even more of those people, right? It's a lot easier. Would you lump in there people who are like, yeah, I make $200, $400, $500, $1 million, $5 million, $10 million a year, and I'm cool making that much? Is it abnormal for somebody who's making, as an example, $5 million a year to not want to make $5 million in one the next year?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's abnormal. I think it's a sign of how much they allow their imagination to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And who their peers are and what their level of contribution is. And so I'm certainly not suggesting that money is the only way for that to happen.
Cool.
And things go in cycles. And so there may be an accumulation phase, an increase in the amount of money. And then what ends up happening is like, okay, now I want to pause for a moment and decide what to do with this and what to do with myself and tune back into that signal. And sometimes that just looks like shedding a lot of it. I think that does actually run counter to, you know, Adam Smith in Wealth of Nations, decades, over 100 years ago, wrote about the invisible hand that seems to guide the affairs of men and women. And what he was talking about essentially was entrepreneurism, this ability to take existing resources and somehow alchemize them and turn them into something more valuable. I think to disengage from that is counter to the laws of the universe. To be actively engaged in that and participating and facilitating that in a way that feels right for the individual, that's normal, that's natural. Whether it's adding five more clients to your gym this month, or whether it's figuring out what to invest your fortune in, that's
launching a charity or contributing in other ways. Like it's not just about adding, it's adding wealth, I guess. It would maybe be a better word for me to understand it anyways. In all aspects, right? Maybe it's taking more vacations even. Maybe you're paid the exact same, but instead of working your, 53 weeks a year, you're going to work 50 weeks and go on holiday and you make the same. And in that way, you're making more. Okay, cool. I'm with you. Cool, man. All right. So let's get to this last thing before you leave me. First, have you seen the movie Arrival with Amy? Okay. So then you probably know what my next question is, I guess. Have you met those squids? And I knew I already asked this question. It's a circle. So, time piercing, right? I'm super interested in it. You've said it a couple times on this call. So can we get a little bit into that? And I mean, can you tell me what your thoughts are on Arrival as well in relation to time piercing? Is it just a movie? Should I dismiss it or what?
Good. As a movie, I thought it was terrible. I didn't think it was a very good movie at all. But I think it served a very powerful purpose at this particular moment in human history to illustrate and to introduce a meme, not the internet meme, but the original thought unit. That's what a meme is a unit of thought, like photon is a unit of light, meme is a unit of thought. So I think it's a very important film to introduce that meme that time is an illusion. Linear time is an addiction actually that most of us have. And we like to chop up our experience into these units called days and everything like that. But Arrival was very accurate in the character's experience, you know, Amy Adams' experience of getting real-time answers from what she would have perceived as her future self. But let's just run through this. And it's a very, very simple deconstruction. By the way, I am not now, nor am I ever, claiming to teach the truth, speak the truth. I don't even claim to live the truth. What I do, what I have found is that rather than asking what's true, I started asking what's useful. And I found that it was very easy for me to iterate quickly through beliefs and paradigms and leave behind that which no longer was useful and adopt that which was, because I didn't have the attachment anymore to being right. Man, humans, more than anything, we love to be right. Because it makes us significant and important, and if we're important, then we'll be loved, and that's all ultimately want to do anyway. So that's the disclaimer that I just carry around with me all the time. I'm not saying this is the truth. I'm saying that it's the most useful thing that I've found yet. So with that being said, let's look at time. And if something is to be real, then all of its ingredients have to be real. If something is made up of ingredients, three quarters of which, or half of which, or a third of which, those ingredients are not as advertised, then the entire thing is suspect, right? You know, if you go and you're looking for a great meal, but then you find out that, you know, it's actually artificial ingredients and all that, but like, hey, that's not what was advertised. So if we apply that idea that in order for a thing to be real, all of its components have to be genuine, and we look at time, we can very quickly, very logically realize that time isn't real. Time has three ingredients. It's got three components to it. What are they? Past, present, and future. But only one of those is real. If you think about the past, well, how do we know if something's real? Well, have you ever seen it? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to the past? And people say, yeah, it was last Friday. Okay, well, it's the past now. Mm-hmm. But when you were there, it wasn't the past, it was the present. And last night when you went to sleep, you may have been thinking about the morning, which was this morning. And when you were going to sleep, you were thinking about tomorrow. And yet when you woke up in the morning, you didn't go, oh shit, it's tomorrow. All right. It's not tomorrow anymore. It's today. So there is no past. There's only thinking about the past in the present. Mm-hmm. And that means the past isn't real. It's a psychological construct. There's no such thing as a future either. Because you've never been to the future, you can't go to the future, you can only think about the future in the present moment. And since there's no past and there's no future outside of our thinking about them right now, that means the only thing that's real is the present. And so with that being said, you might go, okay, yeah, useful toy, right? Nice philosophical trinket. How do I make that real? Well, imagine if... You and I were talking about this earlier.
Yes, we were. I was also re-listening to some Eckhart earlier, which is interesting. Oh, wow. And I'm literally on this chapter. Like, again, yeah. So, yeah.
That's perfect. Well, check this out. So here I am. And for those people that may have been living under a rock and don't know what this is not Ray-Ban's newest sunglasses, and I'm not going skiing. This is virtual reality. So for those of you who haven't seen it yet, these are the lenses. And here I am. And from the outside observer, it's not terribly exciting. But for the person who's experiencing this from the inside out, it's like, whoa, you're seeing like whatever you want to see. And so you're inside this world having this entire experience. And yet you can have the awareness that you're actually in the room, but your attention is completely seduced and captivated by whatever you're doing in virtual reality, fighting robots, swimming with blue whales, wingsuiting. That all seems real to you, even though there's this part of your awareness that knows, okay, this is not real. Well, what happens when you come out? You come out of the virtual environment, you go, whoa, that was amazing. Now my attention is back in this room, and now I have the awareness of having been in that virtual world. So this is a beautiful metaphor that explains how our relationship with the quantum field actually exists. So right now, you're in this physical time-space reality having what feels like a very singular experience of your life. But what if this experience of life is being observed and absorbed and felt and created and engaged with and interacted with and laughing and crying and making love and making war and making money and losing it and making it again. That whole adventure of life is being experienced through one perceptual apparatus. This is a perceptual apparatus, a visual one. We have one that has six senses: visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, gustatory, and emotional. And so when you have the awareness that you're more than your body, which is, again, is a whole other frame, but when you realize that you're more than your body, like you have a body, but you're not your body, then you start to realize that, oh, this is just this is kind of an agreement that I'm in here, and it's a wonderful place. And outside of this physical place and this physical perception, there's lots of other things that are going on simultaneously. So imagine that here you are playing this wonderful adventure called life. And then you realize that, you know what, I'm here having this, but I bet there's a lot going on outside of this. So you go like this and you go, poof, and you take off your life goggles. I don't mean like exit your life. That's, you know, everybody does that in their own time. But you're here, now you're outside of the time-space reality, and you're looking on this giant field. Imagine like a football field or a soccer field, infinitely large. And what do you see? You see every other version of you that exists simultaneously on the quantum field, and they're all wearing goggles. Hmm. And then you go up to and you tap on the shoulder, and the other version turns around and goes, whoa, it's me. And you go, I know, it's me. Hey, it's you. And they go, it's you. And then you start having this dialogue outside of your subjective linear time frames, because their past is different than yours, and their future is different than yours, and your past is different than theirs, and your future is different than theirs. But because in the quantum level, you can have this conversation. And what ends up happening is you can actually try on their goggles and go, whoa, that's incredible. And they can try on your goggles and go, oh man, I remember that. I think I remember that. And this may be all abstraction, but here's how to make it practical. You get to create whatever you want to create from this moment forward. Because while you may have a particular memory of a particular timeline, what's next is ultimately unlimited. And you're only limited by your imagination, which, by the way, imagination and memories don't exist the way that we think they do. We think memory is a collection of chemical residue in our brain. But your memories, and science will catch up to this eventually. God, sounds like it's such a woo-woo thing to say. Again, now I'm not talking truth here. I'm talking usefulness. So what we think of as a memory today is actually the imagination of your past self. And what we think is imagination today, we're actually picking up memories that are coming from elsewhere on the field. And that's a conversation that's happening right now between you and another version of yourself. So right now you're experiencing it as an imagination. Wow, wouldn't it be cool if, when really it's the version of you that's already experienced that, thinking back to you going, God, I remember when, and those memes are hooking up and they're having sex in the quantum field, and they're creating a new memory and a new possibility for you. And this is a very, very, very exciting time to be alive, because all of this stuff is becoming self-evident, and all you need to do is test it for yourself. You know, I have nothing to gain by people saying, that's right, that's wrong. Live your own life, test your own paradigms, and come away with what's useful, and hopefully improve on it, because this is open source theology, man. User-generated experience. Mm.
Love it. Love it, my man. Ryan here, he asked, how does he, and I think this is good, because everything you've said right now is really awesome. How does one, let's say Ryan, for instance, how does he start accepting this more, right? Like, how does he commented, how do I get around thinking about the past and the future as real? How do you mentally, like, what are practical things or impractical things, anything that one could do to help you get over that? Should Ryan go sit on a park bench for 2 years? Should he go get a VR thin machine, or what? What would you recommend?
Well, really, just having the conversation, and even Ryan just asking that question, says a lot about where, I mean, Ryan, I'll talk to you directly. The fact that you're asking the question and you didn't just have the thought, but you took it upon yourself to take the thought, translate it into language through your fingers on the keys, you're deeper into this than a lot of people, because a lot of people think and they're like, okay, cool, they've already left, in which case we could talk about them. But the idea of Ryan asking this question, that already says a lot about, you know, the momentum that you're on. So the quick answer is, have more conversations like this. Explore on your own. You know, a resource that I'll put for anybody, just go to jesseelder.com, and there's a lot of here's some material there. I don't know how many transcripts, and there's a training that we've got, and it's all free. I mean, we're just trying to get this material out there. So go to jesseelder.com, and that will be a cool way for you to continue the time piercer exploration. But just like, you know, dipping your toe into a swimming pool that you think is a little cold, or it might be a little hot, you don't know. So you test the water, and you can test the water on this. You can test this philosophy for yourself by saying, for example, what if time isn't what I think it is? And what that does is allows your beautiful brain to open up to some different possibilities. You know, one of the biggest things that we can do as human beings is to just question things that are, and just question and say, I wonder why it's like that. What if it wasn't like that? What if it wasn't like that? What if I didn't have to do this? Instead of saying, screw this, I hate this, or I wish I had that, you just say, well, what if I didn't have to do this? What if it wasn't like this? What if it didn't have to be that way? And this is very soft and it's very subtle. And sometimes your brain is like, yeah, but I want answers. Give yourself the opportunity. Suspend your disbelief long enough to begin to normalize some of this experience.
Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully that answers your question. I know it would answer, you know, if I time pierce myself, it would have answered. Maybe this is where I got the answer to that question, because I don't know what it was for me. And that's why I'm. And I know it's woo-woo. I know a lot of people watching or listening to this or whatever may roll their eyes, and that's totally fine. You may need to roll your eyes at this moment, but there's going to be a day where you just won't. And if that's your path. If that's on your trajectory. And when you don't, you'll really start to, I don't know, it's almost like just seeing new colors you've never seen before is probably the best way I've described it. It's like all of a sudden, it's like your whole life you thought, you know, everything was just red and green. And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and there's all these other colors, and there's no other way. Like, it would be impossible to explain the color pink to somebody who's never seen pink. Totally. Even though it's close, you could say, listen, it's kind of like red, but it's not. And like, I don't understand. What does that mean? So just getting deep into thought, I think will help. I think for me, one of the biggest things that helped me was Byron Katie's book. Are you familiar with Byron Katie's work and all that stuff? Basically, her whole stuff is loving what is, and meditation, allowing yourself to just sit with your thoughts for a while, or with not your thoughts, hopefully, as well. It really gets you out of the stuff we attach ourselves to. So that'll be my small little thing I can add to that as a super skeptic, like hardcore conservative religious person who would have thought you were, you know, some evil incarnation like 5 years ago. So, cool. No offense, but that was a different AJ. All right, cool. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I could forever, and that would be great for me. But if somebody wants to keep hearing this awesome stuff, follow your things, learn more about time piercing, reality hacking, things like that, where can we find you?
Best place really is on Facebook right now.
Facebook.
Just look up my page. I do most of my stuff from my personal page, and to my... you know, to my sadness, Facebook won't change the 5,000 friends, but the follow option is on. So there's a lot of people that we're connected with now. And this particular journey really just began back in 2013 in this iteration. Before that, I was the martial arts guy and I had a lot of these thoughts for myself. I was using a lot of this, but I wasn't sharing it. And I realized that that's not cool. So Facebook is a great place. Go to also my website, jesseelder.com. And we've got some of the time piercing material is there.
Yes. And there's cool docs and stuff if you follow him on Facebook or end up in any of his free groups also. I'll add that. Cool. Jesse, thank you for being here. I'm going to do an outro really quick. Maybe I'll talk to you in 2 seconds. Thank you for watching, listening to, whatever you're doing, reading AJTV episode 22 with Jesse Elder, where we talked about all the things. If you like the show, you can just send money but we don't really want money. You could just hit like and maybe share it, maybe tag your friends. If you hated it, you know, do the angry face, tag your enemies. That'll be even better. Thank you so much. And as always, leave any kind of comments, questions, or concerns in the comments. And I always go back and answer these personally. I don't have a bot do it or anything like that, okay? And of course, thank you one more time, Jesse, for being here. I appreciate you for who you are.